Hello all, welcome and thank you for listening in today. As always, I'm your host Nick, and this is History's Great Mysteries. It is my goal every other week to bring you guys some of the most baffling events of human history and of course present it in a way that allows you, the listener, to form your own theories. And when it comes to mysteries, today I'm bringing you guys the Holy Grail. And, well, not like literally the Holy Grail, because that's kind of unironically a real mystery that I could cover, but no, today I am figuratively bringing you guys the Holy Grail of mysteries, specifically when it comes to aliens and UFOs. It's been a while since I touched on this topic, extensively at least, and there have actually been some interesting recent developments in this realm that deserve some discussion. So I thought what better time than now to tackle what might just be the most well-known UFO-type mystery in the entire world. And some of you may have guessed it already, but today I'll present to you in all its glory the legendary UFO case commonly just referred to as Roswell. Now, I don't know if it's the same for you guys, but when it comes to Roswell, of course, everyone knows about it. Just saying the word Roswell, everyone immediately knows what you're talking about, right? It invokes thoughts of aliens, UFOs, government cover-up, conspiracy. But for me, I never really knew the nitty-gritty details of the incident. And from some cursory conversations with a few other people, it seems like maybe this is common. Like, who actually knows what happened? The dates, the times, the people, the interviews. You know, I certainly didn't, but I of course knew of the legendary reputation that this case had, and so when I first considered this case for the podcast, I did what I always do when I'm picking, you know, what I'm about to go over, and I did some preliminary research just to get a feeling for the case, you know, if it's the kind, if it's the right kind of event to cover, right? Like, I don't want to just jump into research on a case that, you know, 99% most likely has an answer already, right? Or maybe this case just, like, doesn't have enough evidence behind it, right? Et cetera, et cetera. There's, like, a lot of things that I go through on my checklist is like, will this make a good episode? And when I first started looking at this event, the Roswell incident, the first things I started reading and hearing were that this was all just a big misunderstanding. You know, like 100% case closed. There's nothing alien or supernatural about it. Like, that's what I read. Like, every article, every online source, everything's pretty much like, nope, big misunderstanding. And usually when I, you know, would be doing research for something that I cover on this podcast, an inclination like that would draw me away from it, right? But honestly, I stopped for a second and I thought, I was like, you know, the certainty and the outright, like, vehement denial of any kind of conspiracy or alien involvement was actually getting, like, a little bit fishy. Like, every source, right? And a lot of these sources as well are, like, government websites, government documents releasing this information, right? And I thought to myself, you know, the reason that this is such a huge case is because people believe that it's a huge government cover-up. And this is exactly what the research would look like, you know, if it's a cover-up. So I decided, like, maybe I just have to dive deeper, like, really, really deep. And and I did. I went down the rabbit hole, right? And so here I am, like, 2 weeks later. I haven't shaved, I haven't seen the sun, and I am ready to divulge my findings to you guys. So as the name suggests, this incident took place in Roswell, New Mexico, in the year of 1947. At this time, Roswell was a small town mostly consisting of farms and ranches, and it was an otherwise quiet evening in July when several townspeople reported seeing a disc-shaped object in the sky flying northwest. It was also that night that a rancher by the name of Mac Brazel, recalled hearing a loud crash, an explosion-type sound in the night, but he didn't go investigate due to the rainstorm and the late hour. It wasn't until the next morning when he and a ranch hand were riding horseback along this ranch when they came across something very strange, something that Mr. Brazel concluded must be the culprit of the sounds that he had heard last night. And, you know, something had crashed on his ranch, that much is certain. And almost everyone who talks about this case, who looks at it, can agree on that point, skeptics and believers alike. Something definitely crashed on his ranch. But what? And that really is the million-dollar question. At first, you know, while riding closer to this debris, the pair can only comment on, you know, what they were seeing as just very nondescript debris, pretty much, right? And as they get closer, however, they're having trouble putting into words exactly what they're looking at. When Mr. Brazel was later reporting this find, he would speak of various chunks of metallic materials, rubbers, sticks, and then most notably a very strange foil-like material that exhibited extraordinary properties, according to him. And so these two who originally found the crash, I believe, were honestly confused. You know, I really think that they didn't know what they were looking at. And over the next few hours and into the afternoon, Mr. Brazel would visit and talk with various people, neighbors, showing them the material that he recovered from the craft and asking them what they thought. A neighbor at the time, Loretta Proctor, is quoted as saying, "Brazel came to my ranch and showed my husband and me a piece of material he said came from a large pile of debris on the property he managed. The piece he brought was brown in color, similar to plastic. Max said that the other material on the property looked like aluminum foil. It was very flexible and wouldn't crush or burn. There was also something he described as tape, which had printing on it. The color of the printing was a kind of purple." And she goes on explaining this material. And in addition to this, you know, people hearing about this, hearing the commotion, they started looking on their own land. And from time to time, we have several more eyewitnesses coming forward with materials that they had picked up on their own as well. And again, we have all these eyewitnesses' accounts trying their best to describe what this material is, all of the properties that it has. Apparently, like, it could be manipulated with the hand. You could move it, you could change it, but then it would return back to its original shape no matter what. And again, you couldn't destroy it, couldn't burn it, nothing like that. So at this point, the small town is buzzing, and there are many, many people at this time who have interacted with the crash in some way. And these original witnesses are some of the most credible, consistent facts we have about this case, because when the military gets involved, things, you know, really start to get fuzzy. At some point, Mr. Brazel decides that he's going to contact the local sheriff, George Wilcox, and show him what he found. And seeing the strange material and the crash site with the further strange debris, George Wilcox then decides to contact the local military, and he gets in touch with an Air Force officer, Colonel Blanchard. Soon thereafter, as you can imagine, the small town is just swarmed with military men sweeping the area and Mr. Brazel's ranch for all signs of this debris. Leading this operation is Special Intelligence Officer Major Marcel, who will be a very important player in this case. And I also want you guys to keep something in mind when I tell of details that have to do with the military and the government and, you know, their communications slash statements about this case. It's information that has been released by the government, right? It's the government telling us this. And remember, this is one of the most hotly debated government cover-up stories out there. And as it will become obvious, the U.S. government did indeed manipulate certain details about this case, details that they didn't want the public to know the full truth of. So when I talk about military this, military that, you know, take it with a grain of salt and that all this information I'm relaying to you was released by them. So anyways, after assessing the crash site, picking up the materials, and interviewing the townspeople, Major Marcel radios back into his superior, Colonel Blanchard, at the nearby Air Force Base, and informs him that he believes they have recovered a flying saucer. It is unknown the exact details of this initial report. Many argue that Major Marcel didn't fully intend the term flying saucer to equate to alien spaceship, but no matter the intention, this report found its way onto the front page of Roswell newspaper the next morning with the headline, "Roswell Army Airfield Captures Flying Saucer on Ranch in Roswell Region." Now, the story talks about a flying disc and the remains that had been flown to a higher headquarters in Fort Worth, Texas, but with no real further details. This, for obvious reasons, stirs up the public even further. The small town was already in a frenzy, but now this frenzy was publicly extending to the Southwest region and even, you know, to the entire United States to a certain extent. And behind the scenes, something was going on with the military, because it was the very next day in that same newspaper that we have an official statement by Brigadier General Roger Ramey, who was a commander of the 8th Air Force at Fort Worth, Texas, saying that the debris was nothing more than a weather balloon, not an alien flying saucer at all. And this story's headline was, "Harassed Rancher Who Located Saucer, Sorry He Told About It." So we effectively have this higher Air Force general coming out and saying, "Nope, nope, everything's fine here, sorry for the mix-up, it's nothing more than a weather balloon. Yeah, yeah, you know, don't look over there in that direction, look over here, right here, it was a weather balloon." And with this initial mix-up and, you know, a splash of misinformation, there's hot contention among researchers of this case. Like, was the initial story correct or the second one? And if the first story was wrong, why was it printed in the first place, right? And this was, again, it was printed via a report from Major Marcel, the intelligence officer who said it was a flying saucer. And he was in charge of the cleanup. Like, why are we denying the guy who's the main person in charge for the cleanup, right? Now, at this point, everyone in the public is confused, right, as I'm sure you are too. And, you know, we're all wondering, like, what's actually going on here? And pretty much from this point on, the government is in full-on recovery mode, right? They're trying to say, no, it was all a big misunderstanding. It was just a weather balloon that crashed on the ranch that day. In Fort Worth, Texas, there is a viral photo attached to this case that was taken around this time. And in the photo, it shows Major Marcel kneeling over what the military claims was the crash material that was recovered. And this material, this debris that's laid out on the floor, it's laid out in a way that clearly insinuates the idea that it's a weather balloon, right? And most people agree that what's shown in the picture truly is pieces of a weather balloon, but, you know, the higher spot of contention is, like, are those debris on the floor actually what was recovered near Roswell? And it was sort of a move by the military to be like, okay, here's the guy who was responsible for the confusion. He's kneeling over what clearly is a weather balloon, right? Case closed. That was kind of like their photo to end the discussion. And, you know, it didn't do that. Needless to say, it did not end the discussion. The reason the case isn't closed is because, you know, people, the eyewitnesses, secondhand witnesses, ex-military officers and all that have over the years called bullshit. And, you know, that is to say that they denied the government's claim. They deny the claim that it was a weather balloon. And, you know, they say, you know, we know the real truth. And that truth essentially involves this huge, giant government cover-up, right? That's why this Roswell case is a legend. And the main source of this legacy, the real source of the flame, came from Major Marcel himself. He could be said to be the real reason why the Roswell incident has maintained its status in the UFO world. And this is because years after the incident, after his career in the military was over, Marcel would come out and say that what he recovered in Roswell that day most certainly was not a weather balloon, and most certainly was of unearthly origin. In several later interviews, he talked again about the strange material that he and many of the townspeople witnessed firsthand in 1947. You know, he was doubling down on his statement, his original statement that, you know, it was not of this world. He talks a lot about the material, saying that it was light, bendable, but couldn't be destroyed or burned. It contained strange markings, right, those strange purple markings. And again, he was certain that it could not have been of this earth. And he tried to assure people that, you know, he's a trained military intelligence officer. It was his job to be familiar with all the types of aircraft and all the materials, the weapons. And that's why he's confident in his assessment that it wasn't of this earth. And the mystery and the confusion goes even further when you consider another event that may have happened a few days after the initial cleanup on the Brazel Ranch. Apparently, and, you know, bear in mind, a lot of this information is secondary, right? And it's highly based on conjecture and conversations that have little substantiation, right? Some have more than others. And there's not, like, concrete details. I can't be like, well, this material was found here. A lot of this secondary event that I'm about to describe is just conversation, right? But needless to say, there are more than a few stories involved in this case that talk about this additional cleanup on a separate crash site. And apparently the military had reason to believe that another craft had crashed in a nearby area of the first crash. And when they sent out a bit of a reconnaissance mission to find this second craft, they found it. And it was more intact than the other crash, where there was just mostly debris. Apparently, the second reconnaissance mission found a flying saucer that was in better shape. And even more than that, they found what they say were four bodies strewn out around it, bodies that were not of humans, bodies that were not of anything of this world, bodies of aliens. And, you know, upon inspection, I'll just go verbatim from an online article of this event that says, "Those who participated in the recovery of the bodies have provided consistent descriptions of what these extraterrestrial biological entities," and this is the official designation, looked like. "They were 4 to 5 feet tall, humanoid, with big heads, large eyes, and slit-like mouths. They were thin, and they had long arms with 4 fingers. An army nurse who worked on the initial autopsy at Roswell remarked on how fragile the skull and bones were. Within hours, the bodies were put into large sealed wooden crates, loaded onto the bomb pit of a B-29, and flown to the Fort Worth Army Airfield," end quote. You know, from there, we can only imagine where the remains were taken and for what purpose. But again, this additional incident is heavily based in hearsay, and it's, you know, much like the main incident in some ways, that the accounts, they come from credible people, credible individuals, ex-military personnel who were there, who would have seen exactly what they're talking about, and we have no real reason to not believe them. And, you know, they were conceivably there. They were at the correct time and place, so what they're saying they saw, they theoretically could have seen. But more than just what they're saying, we can't substantiate their claims. And as the years pressed on after the incident, more and more accounts of eyewitnesses involved in the, you know, quote-unquote cover-up begin to pop out, specifically details that are being revealed to family members. So let me explain that. You know, kind of the scenario, like, you have this old grandpa who was in the military. "Come here, Johnny boy, let your old pa tell you what I really saw in Roswell back in 47, you know, that kind of thing. And these close family members then come forward to the media and they relay this story that, you know, they no doubt believe is the truth. And yes, while these accounts have no physical evidence or proof behind them, it is worth noticing just how many of these accounts came about, specifically when it comes to Roswell. And it's easy to write off one old geezer telling extraordinary stories about his time in the military, but when dozens of these stories start popping up with heavy similarities, you know, maybe it's something worth paying attention to. And again, you also have these neighbors, the townspeople, who were involved in that initial event that years later still recount the same information that they reported back in those first days of the case. For instance, you have Jesse Marcel, who's the son of Major Marcel, whom, when interviewed in 1993 about the debris recovered by his father, he said, "There appeared to be a type of writing. This writing was a purple-violet hue, and it had an embossed appearance. The figures were composed of curved geometric shapes. It had no resemblance to Russian, Japanese, or any other foreign language. It resembled hieroglyphics, but it had no animal-like characters," end quote. And there are also quite a few accounts, some better substantiated than others, of the U.S. military stepping in and demanding / bribing silence out of people who wanted to let the world know what they saw. For instance, I will play an interview from a 2018 documentary on Roswell, an interview of one of those townspeople at the time, a woman named Frankie Rowe, whom handled some of the debris before the military had a chance to clean it up. She recounts an incident where a military man had come into her home and asked her about it afterwards, and, you know, well, I'll play it for you, all right?
"I said, yes, I did handle it. And he started emphasizing, no, you didn't. Well, my mother was pretty strict, and we didn't lie. So I'm insistent that, yes, I saw it, yes, I held it. And he got mad, and he got louder, and he had one of those, looks like a small baseball bat that hooks on the side of your belt, and he took that out, and he's holding it, and he starts beating his hand. Every time he said something, he would hit that on his hand, and he would say, I want you to understand, you were never there. You did not see anything. You did not hear a conversation. And he said, if you can't understand this, there are things that we can do."
And clearly, this seems like a case of intimidation, but there were also strong accounts of bribery, most notably of the rancher himself, Mr. Brazel, whom was taken into military custody only to be released a few days later with nothing at all to say about the event or the debris, and a new and unexplainable large amount of money. Shortly thereafter, he purchased a brand new truck and moved to a different city in New Mexico, all with funds that his family had no idea how he had come to acquire. And these were just a couple of the accounts with, you know, there's a huge amount of it when it comes to this case, a huge amount of people coming out and saying, well, here I got intimidated, here I got bribed, here. And, you know, with this amount of silencing going on, why would they do it? Why would the government do it if they aren't trying to hide something? If it really was just a weather balloon, like they claimed, why would they ever do stuff like this? And it wasn't actually until the 1990s that the U.S. government finally came forward with a public reason that might explain why they tried to silence all these people. So they claimed, yes, what was recovered that day truly was a balloon, but it wasn't a weather balloon. Apparently, it was part of a top-secret military program called Project Mogul. Project Mogul, as they explained, was an experimental Cold War-era project with the intent of spying on Russian nuclear testing activities. So the experiment involved tying these high-tech auditory listening devices to large airborne balloons high in the air, with hopes that they could hear small changes in sound waves that could possibly clue the government in to when the Russians were testing atomic bombs on the other side of the world. And yes, it is true that this program really did exist. They really did have these listening devices attached to huge balloons, and it really was a top-secret endeavor. Furthermore, it is known that a test site for Project Mogul was indeed in New Mexico, along with a handful of other U.S. states. And this is why the U.S. government said that they were so weird and secretive and hush-hush about what really happened in Roswell. They didn't want this top-secret program to be revealed to the public. And so at the very beginning of the podcast, when I said that most sources covering the Roswell incident talk about how this is a closed case, about how it really was just a big balloon, an even bigger misunderstanding, this is what they all point to. They all say, nope, Project Mogul. Clean cut, it was Project Mogul. That's all it was. Nothing supernatural. But the true believers did not let this explanation sway them, because, as I said before, the believers maintained that this was all a giant cover-up by the U.S. government. So when it's the U.S. government that comes out and, you know, say, here are the final answers, you can understand why the distrust remains. Of course they have this convoluted explanation, right? This only furthers the extent of the monumental conspiracy that's in play here. And, you know, at the end of the day, we still have these initial reports of the strange material, the initial declaration from Major Marcel. This report obviously reporting that what they found in the New Mexico desert that day could not have been man-made, even to the extent of the second incident in which alien bodies may have been found. These things remain despite the Project Mogul explanation from the government. So where do you stand? At this point, I have gone over the major points of the case, and keep in mind that there are many, many more sources, reports, stories out there about Roswell that I simply do not have time to cover. And if you're a skeptic, there are, I'm sure, are many reports out there and quotes that can confirm your skepticism. Likewise, if you're a believer, there are just as many quotes and accounts out there that can confirm your belief. And if you're still on the fence, let me go ahead and jump into the common theories around this incident to perhaps allow you to cement your stance. And as always, I will wrap it up with my personal theory as to what happened out there in Roswell in the year of 1947. So obviously, this first skeptical theory here is that the incident in Roswell was nothing more than a balloon, a military balloon from Project Mogul, right? And here's pretty much how the story goes for them. We have this secret military testing going on in the New Mexico desert, Project Mogul, that obviously involves these huge balloons with a little bit of tech thrown in. And I alluded to earlier, we have that rain and thunderstorm that was going on that night on Mr. Brazel's ranch, and, you know, he hears this huge commotion. That was the balloon crashing from the storm, right? The next morning, he finds the culprit, and he sees this mess of incredibly strange debris, and to a certain extent, it's understandable to imagine that these ranchers, these town people of this small town in rural New Mexico, could be quite baffled by this mess of strange materials that they've never seen before, especially by the skin of the balloon. That's that foil-type material that was light yet resilient, it could possibly explain these odd details that are recounted of its properties. And the remains of the crash, when they were taken to Fort Worth, they wanted to clear up the air as quickly as possible, so they had Major Marcel himself come over and take a picture with the wreckage of what clearly looks like a balloon, remember? And this, obviously, you know, the second event, the secondary event of the bodies being found, they say that that never happened. That one was just complete craziness made up by people who want a little bit of the limelight, right? So you may ask then, why do we have all these people, all of these stories popping up that seem to indicate that a cover-up happened? And from the skeptic's point of view, the answer is simple. Well, once the fire started burning, it couldn't be stopped. People are jumping at the chance to spin extraordinary tales, you know, to further this Roswell story, stretching the facts, embellishing the details, and sometimes just straight up lying, you know. And ever since that first day when Major Marcel made those errant comments to the newspaper that then drafted that suggestive, you know, aliens are here type story, people have been chomping at the bit to throw ideas anywhere and everywhere with this case. Maybe they did pick up the material and then they'll just completely embellish the details to fit this alien narrative. And again, I'll say, for as many people out there that are connected to this case that are claiming it was a government cover-up, there are equally as many credible people saying, no, you guys are crazy, it was just Project Mogul. The one thing that remains a bit fuzzy when it comes to its balloon theory is Major Marcel. More specifically, why did Major Marcel, a respected and trusted military personnel, report that they had recovered an alien saucer? You know, why was that initial report made? Moreover, why was the military relatively apathetic when it came to that first newspaper article that had the headline about a flying saucer being recovered in Roswell? And, you know, these are good questions. Like, how can they be reconciled? And that will bring me to the next theory. Our second theory here goes that, it sticks along the skeptic side of things, but essentially it says that the U.S. government intentionally drummed up this story of a flying saucer. The first remarks by Major Marcel and the subsequent newspaper story were all intentional. They were all orchestrated by the U.S. government. And why? Why would the U.S. government ever want to start a nationwide frenzy at the notion that aliens crashed in the New Mexico desert? And to this, the answer can be quite simple. This year, 1947, is at the beginning of the Cold War era, and the fear of Russian spies, Russian invasion, Russian bombs are at an all-time high. Instead of coming out to the public with the truth, you know, the Project Mogul truth, what if we diverted their attention away to something more fantastic? Something that just might get more civilians to put their eyes in the sky and be, you know, little government lookouts for anything fishy that could be going on with Russian planes, Russian missiles, etc. And remember, at this time in the 1940s, radar systems were very rudimentary when compared to the vast radar systems of today. So the U.S. couldn't get a full view of their airspaces around the country at all times, and of course that bothered them with the fears going on. So with the public entering this new era, this new craze of UFO sightings, the U.S. could now kind of like, they had these people that are looking up at the sky all the time for these UFOs that everybody's hearing about, and they're immediately going to report anything they see. And beyond that, right, with this new craze going on, the U.S. could now test their secret military weapons and aircraft with, you know, relative immunity. Like, if someone saw something, which may have been the case in Roswell, then the public, you know, would jump on this bandwagon of UFO, and no one ever mutters a word about top secret military testing. And of course, this is the kind of silence that the government wanted. And there's even proof that the U.S. government intentionally misled the public into believing in UFOs. I speak of a case in 1956 when the government informed the public and the military men that were assigned this operation that they were tasked with transporting the wreckage of a UFO alien spacecraft from Budapest to Texas. And this wreckage was, you know, to be staunchly guarded, secured from prying eyes, but in reality it would come out years later that what these personnel were actually guarding and transporting were the Hungarian crown jewels that the U.S. was keeping safe from the Russians. So you have this double purpose of why the government might want to mislead when it comes to Roswell. And for a lot of people, this cleans up the missing pieces of the incident, and, you know, it answers the outstanding whys. But something interesting here that I don't quite understand with this explanation is why the continued secrecy. Like, if I'm the U.S. government, and 50 years later, I finally release the top secret documents that say, hey, what happened in Roswell was actually just Project Mogul, why not take the, just literally the extra half-inch step and say, hey, we also intentionally placed this UFO story, sorry about that. But no, they came out with this half-explanation that doesn't really clear anything up at all for those who believed it was a cover-up anyways. So, a bit of an empty feeling in my stomach, but at any rate, we'll move into the next theory. So this one still centers more on the skeptic side of things, in that perhaps what crashed that day in Roswell wasn't a harmless balloon at all, but a top-secret military weapon/aircraft that resembled a flying saucer. Maybe the reason people like Mr. Brazel and even Major Marcel mistook this craft for aliens is simply because the aircraft/missile that crashed there was so advanced and so top-secret, no one had any kind of explanation other than, well, extraterrestrial. Essentially, this broad theory can take many forms. You know, oh, the material they saw was this new experimental thing that the military was testing. And like, oh, the shape that they mistook, it resembled a saucer, but that's because this was like some high-tech aircraft that no one's ever seen before. It's kind of this catch-all theory, you know, when nothing else totally adds up. But it's also kind of the theory that is denied by both sides, because as I'm sure you're coming to understand, this is a very polarizing incident. And for the most part, people either fall on one side or the other. There's, you know, this theory is kind of in the middle ground of that. The U.S. government does not report and has not released any information to substantiate this claim. Like I said, they say it's Project Mogul, which is a balloon, and nothing else. And the believers will, of course, argue against this theory, more in favor of the extraterrestrial side of things. So you kind of have both sides of the spectrum not agreeing with this middle ground theory here. And again, there's no evidence that points to this, but, you know, to be fair, there's not a lot of concrete physical proof in any direction with this incident. There's just lots and lots of secondhand conjecture type leads. But in any event, let's move on to the hot take here, the believer side of things, and let's see what they got. So yes, now I will cover the theory that has turned this incident into legend. The belief that what crashed in Roswell, New Mexico was nothing less than an alien spacecraft, and the subsequent giant government cover-up that kept it all secret. So first off, they point out that when it comes to UFOs in America, sightings really started to pick up in 1947, which many say is not a coincidence. This is a time period when genuine alien craft were making frequent appearances in our atmosphere, and, you know, for who knows what purpose. And one of them crashed at Roswell. The stranger-than-fiction qualities of the materials that were recovered on Mr. Brazel's ranch could be nothing other than material that is not of this earth. And these believers take delight in pointing out that there are dozens and dozens of townspeople recounting the same information before the government got involved. Different people, different personalities and alignments, but all with eerily similar remarks when it came to the extraordinary properties of that debris. And how could these descriptions be so similar if they are not of the same, you know, if they're not the same observations of the same material? And it tends to point the idea that, yeah, perhaps what they really found that day on the Brazel Ranch was, could only be described as something otherworldly. And again, you know, you talk about this idea that it couldn't be destroyed, it couldn't be burned, it would return to its same shape no matter what, something that is certainly not present on Earth. Of course, and perhaps more substantially, you have the trained Major Marcel declaring it a flying saucer upon his investigation. And then years later in interviews, he confirms refusing to go back on his word. Yes, he says it really was otherworldly, it was a flying disc, and he's sure of it. And Major Marcel actually died in recent years without ever saying anything on the contrary. He stuck with his original word through all of his life. Secondly, you have this newspaper article that's fully backing the idea of the saucer, only to a day later, after government intervention, contain a story saying like how wrong they were, how sorry they were that they printed this misinformation. And it just, you know, strikes you as something someone is trying to pull off damage control, right? And there's no denying that there was heavy, heavy involvement of the U.S. military that included heavy manipulation of what the public was allowed to see. And then you also have this secondary event in which several people have claimed that a disc crashed, this time more preserved, even to the extent of alien bodies being recovered on the site. In the eyes of a believer, this, of course, would be the most covered up part of the whole case, which kind of makes sense as to why there's the least amount of concrete information available. And if you guys have listened to a couple of my earlier episodes, namely the Bob Lazar episode, there's a purported connection here. Bob Lazar was the ex-Area 51 employee who was first to blow the whistle on this whole alien technology research that was being conducted by the U.S. government. And in several of his interviews about what he saw and what he knows, he reports that at least one of the recovered alien crafts was taken from Roswell, which then, you know, this must have been the craft from the second incident, the one that was more intact. And to a certain extent, if you truly believe Bob Lazar, then this Roswell incident just got a lot more believable too. And then we also have these unidentified flying objects that are seen in video taken by the U.S. Air Force and Navy being released by the Pentagon, confirming, you know, the Pentagon released these videos and they confirmed it's genuine, it's unidentified, it's a flying object, we don't know what it is. This was the subject of episode 3 in my podcast, and the discs in these videos bear a heavy, heavy resemblance to what eyewitnesses at Roswell claim and what Bob Lazar claimed to have worked on at Area 51. So there's all of these connections going on here. Lastly, when it comes to the alien involvement theory, there's the staggering amount of eyewitness accounts that describe the same thing. The ranchers who picked up the initial debris, the retired military personnel who agree that a cover-up did take place, and they have absolutely nothing to gain by saying these things. If anything, they have something to lose. They have their military career that could be at stake here, right? Even if they are retired, they have their reputation that could be taken away from them if everyone calls them, you know, crazy for saying these things. And I'll give you a couple of examples in this realm, because I know I'm just saying that people said something. Let me just give you a couple examples. And again, there's many, 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 but I'll give you a couple that are pretty substantial in my eyes. First off, we have this military man named Lieutenant Walter Hott, who was a public information officer involved with the Roswell incident, who was there that day that Major Marcel flew out to Fort Worth to have that famous photograph taken with him kneeling over the debris that the government says were from Roswell, the debris that's clearly laid out in a way to say, you know, hey, this was a balloon. And yeah, I talked about that photo earlier on, but it was this public information officer, Lieutenant Walter Hott, who was there that day, who saw all this go on. And he actually, after it happened, he wrote everything down in a sealed testimony and then like tucked it away and said that no one was to look at it or read it until after his death. And eventually his death came, and when officials examined this documentation, they found testimony that this famous photo was actually a hoax. He wrote, and I quote, "The actual crash materials were substituted with weather balloon materials and then photographed with Marcel," end quote. And keep in mind, Lieutenant Walter Hott had bits and pieces of this cover-up story, but not all the pieces. You know, he blew the whistle on his little slice of this thing about the photograph hoax. And when you combine that with other testimonies of cover-up from other retired officers, you can kind of start to put together the whole puzzle and see the bigger picture here. A second example I'll give you comes from a man named Sergeant William Ennis, who worked as a flight engineer stationed in Roswell at the time of the incident. Not only that, he worked in the exact hangar, Hangar P3, that the debris from the crash and perhaps the secondary crash was taken to. So he's a prime candidate as a direct eyewitness to the wreckage. And for many years after the incident, he repeatedly claimed that what they recovered was nothing more than a weather balloon, just as the rest of the military was doing. That is, until 2008, when authors interested in the Roswell case interviewed him, and he revealed what he claimed that he was keeping a real secret all these years. He said that what he had seen back in the hangar back in 1947 was absolutely 100% an alien aircraft. And here's his exact quote. "It was a spaceship, and after all these years, I still don't know how that ship flew. There was no engine." And again, I have to bring it back to the Bob Lazar comparison. Lazar described reverse engineering a spaceship with these exact same qualities, as both of these men have now described their wonder at how the ship flew with no engine. And these examples I give are just a few of the countless numbers that are out there. And I said, and I'll say it again, keep in mind that there are just as many military personnel that were there that maintained that it was nothing more than a balloon from Project Mogul. So you really kind of have to weigh both sides here. And through it all, I had a really, really, really tough time coming to my own conclusion on what I feel happened out there in Roswell. But nonetheless, I will now divulge my own opinion. To me, what happened in Roswell is very black and white. Yes or no, one or two. Was it a cover-up, or was it Project Mogul? I don't think there's any in between, really. And when you consider everything, you know, when you consider the evidence, the eyewitness accounts, especially over that first little bit there before the military got involved, something strange definitely crashed out there. That I can say with certainty. But when it comes to more than just stories, conjecture, and hearsay, there isn't much to go on. And it pains me a little bit because there are so many UFO encounters out there, even crash incidents like this one, that have more concrete evidence behind them. This one just has this legendary status because of the pure amount of people that have come forward with stories. So it's hard to come to any kind of concrete conclusion based on just stories, right? Just based on what people are saying, because this really quickly turned into a he said, she said type thing, and you don't really know who to believe. But considering everything, I like I said, I really think there's only two possibilities. Either A, it really was just Project Mogul the entire time, which certainly would answer a lot of things, right? And it makes sense to a certain extent. But B, the other side of the coin, is that this really was an alien spaceship, and there really was a giant government cover-up. And I don't think there's any in between. It's one or the other. And you can't go halfway on this cover-up either. I think if we are going to go that route and say that aliens landed there and crashed, then the cover-up is huge, ginormous, like penetrating throughout every aspect of this case. They have been covering everything up to this day. I don't think there's a half cover-up here, right? And like I said, there's a bad taste in my mouth when it comes to the Project Mogul explanation, because why don't they just say why there was a mix-up in the first place with all this UFO, with Major Marcel coming forward and saying that it was a saucer? That's still not answered. Why did that happen? Why did he say that, and why did he still say that till the day he died? And like I said, I really, really had to consider what my beliefs were here. And I am sure this doesn't come to a surprise for many of my listeners here, especially those who have listened to previous podcast episodes, that I do believe that aliens in some way, shape, or form have interacted in our atmosphere, be it personally or with drones or whatever the case may be. I think in some way they have. So I'm a believer in that aspect, but when it actually comes to Roswell, to what happened in Roswell in 1947, I think I lean more towards the idea that this one is actually explainable with Project Mogul. So yes, contrary to maybe what you would have expected of me, I actually do think this one is non-supernatural. This one specifically, not all of them. Not all of the incidences. I think there's more out there, like I said, that have more evidence behind them that do deserve a closer look. But this one in particular, first we have to look at these. I always talk about those first observations before the military got involved of the material that people are saying is really weird, really not of this world, right? But you have to consider that these people are ranchers, rural ranchers and townspeople that have no idea what the government is using in their materials and their weapons and their aircraft. Like, yeah, if a giant Project Mogul weather balloon crashed on my ranch back then, like, 100% I'm going to look at this weird material that and be like, wow, this, like, came from the stars, right? Like, there's no... Just because they couldn't explain it in those first few days doesn't mean that it came from outer space, right? And two, you do have this, a lot of this weird hush-hush stuff going on with the military in that first few months, and then really up until the 90s when they came out and just said it was Project Mogul. You have these years here where there's just a lot of weird stuff going on, but it's because there was a cover-up. They were trying to divert people's attention away from the true source of what happened, and that was Project Mogul, right? They didn't want people to know that they were doing this test. And that's why I think maybe A, you have this weird this cover-up situation going on where they're telling people different things. B, I think maybe that can explain why Lieutenant Haught saw that photograph hoax. I think maybe that photograph was hoaxed, but they took a weather balloon and put it down there. It wasn't really the Project Mogul balloon, because if they took a picture of the Project Mogul balloon, maybe the Russians could look at that and know something, and they weren't taking any chances here. So yeah, maybe that was a hoax, but that doesn't mean that it was aliens, right? Just because that photograph was a hoax. And then you have all these people later in life that are coming forward with these stories, but they're all, you know, piling on with what's already a frenzy around Roswell. And it can be tempting, yeah, to like jump in on the fame of Roswell, be like, I was there, I saw it too, even though maybe they're just kind of embellishing what really happened. And I'm not saying they're outright lying, but maybe like they caught a glimpse of something, and then through the years they've kind of built it up in their minds. And you know, memory is a very tricky thing, and sometimes it can get people into trouble, especially when it comes to something like this, in a case that has taken its own, you know, legendary path. And we're talking about Roswell here, you know, it's, people were very quick to jump on board with this kind of thing. So fortunately, I do think that this one is explainable, but again, I will admit that if it is a cover-up for an alien spacecraft crashing in Roswell, then it's a huge, huge cover-up, absolutely ginormous in scope. And it actually brings me to something, and I kind of alluded to this very early on in the podcast when I said that there were some recent developments going on that actually can give me some hope here. Because like I said, there are a lot of incidences where I think genuine stuff did happen that cannot be explained with unidentified aircraft. And if you listen to my third episode that involved the USS Nimitz incident, you know that I believe that these craft are in our atmosphere. And I do believe that the government knows more than they're letting on. And recently, actually, there was a New York Times article that released some information that was being talked about and in some documents with the Pentagon very recently in July of 2020 that essentially says they still have an ongoing program that is looking at unidentified phenomenon. It began with the Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon Task Force, is what they called it. And essentially, what they're doing is, and this is quoted on the New York Times article, to standardize collection and reporting on sightings of unexplained aerial vehicles. And most importantly, though, they are now going to be releasing these findings to the public within 180 days of passage of the Intelligence Authorization Act. So essentially what that means is we've had this big underlying top secret program that has been looking at these unidentified aerial phenomena, but hasn't been releasing any of it to the public. It's all very hush-hush. And this recent Pentagon briefing essentially said, well, from now on, we're actually going to be releasing stuff to the public. And that's huge. And there's a lot of actually politicians that are involved in this that are very happy to see this happening, like Harry Reid, Marco Rubio. They're very interested because, one, again, we have all these unidentified craft that we should probably know what they are. Like, that could be a threat. Even if they're not alien, we want to know what they are. If there's a foreign superpower that just leapfrogged us in technology, we would like to know that, right, from the U.S. point of view. So it could come out very recently, and you know, maybe by the time you're listening to this podcast, it has come out that, oh, we saw this, here's a video here, here's some material that was recovered here. Actually, Harry Reid, the former Senate Majority Leader, he said that he believed that they do have material in the government that's being kept that they have not been able to explain yet, that was recovered in an incident like Roswell. Maybe Roswell, but something to that effect. And I'm really, really excited to see how this all plays out. I really sincerely hope that it doesn't play out in a way that like, oh, we'll release this to you, but not this deeper thing. I want them to be very straightforward, and this is their chance to do it. So we'll see how this all plays out, but I'm really excited nonetheless to see how the next couple years of this new releasing of information plays out. Now, I hope you all have enjoyed today's episode, and furthermore, I hope you can all walk around now with a better understanding of what happened at Roswell, whatever your theory may be on, you know, aliens or no aliens. As always, I have all my sources, photos related to this case, all with the post on this Roswell case, episode 15, over on my Facebook page. I'd really like to see you guys over there. I love messages, I love interactions on my posts, anything like that. It means the world to me to see that people are listening and watching and supporting me as well. I really, really, really appreciate it. But at any event, I will be back, not next week, but the week after, with another episode, episode 16. So be on the lookout for that. Thank you again to everyone who took the time to listen today and get to the very end of this episode. In any case, I will see you guys next time. Bye.